Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
To unshackle our economy, I have directed that for every one new regulation, 10 old regulations must be eliminated, just like I did in my very successful first term. And in that first term, we set records on ending unnecessary rules and regulations like no other president had done before.
Speaking to a joint session of Congress on Tuesday night, President Donald Trump.
We ordered all federal workers to return to the office. They will either show up for work in person or be removed from their job.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Free trade, fair trade, neither? Well, that's the argument being made right now as President Donald Trump has initiated tariffs on Mexico, Canada, and China. China hit back hard on Tuesday, saying it will impose additional tariffs of up to 15% on some U.S. goods from March 10th, and restrict exports to 15 U.S. companies. Retaliatory measures coming from China's Ministry of Finance and Ministry of Commerce came just as additional U.S. tariffs took effect on Chinese goods. What are they specifically? Well, the Chinese government says that the tariffs will be imposed on some imported goods originating in the U.S. beginning March the 10th. An imposition of 15% tariffs on chicken, wheat, corn, and cotton. And second, the sorghum, soybeans, pork, beef, aquatic products, fruits, vegetables, dairy products, and that is a 10% tariff on those.
I will immediately begin the overhaul of our trade system to protect American workers and families. Instead of taxing our citizens to enrich other countries, we will tariff and tax foreign countries to enrich our citizens. For this purpose, we are establishing the External Revenue Service to collect all tariffs, duties, and revenues. It will be massive amounts of money pouring into our treasury coming from foreign sources.
Earlier this year, President Donald Trump. Now, Ron Wyden is a Democrat from Oregon and a member of the Senate Finance Committee.
The centerpiece of the Trump economic agenda is extending his 2017 tax law at a cost of more than $4 trillion. Ultra-wealthy individuals who rake in millions each year would get tax breaks of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Families who live paycheck to paycheck would be lucky if they could just get enough to cover the grocery bill for a week. How does Donald Trump and Republicans plan to pay for their multi-trillion dollar giveaways to the ultra-wealthy? For starters, they'll be offering across-the-board tariffs. And let's be clear about what that's all about. Trillions of dollars in new taxes paid for by working Americans and small businesses. And to me, the ultimate distillation of the Trump agenda is paying for tax breaks for the top by increasing child hunger, booting tens of millions off their health insurance, and laying off hundreds of thousands of manufacturing workers. It feels to me like a class war on typical American families.
The average effective U.S. tariff rate on Chinese goods, 33%, up from around 13% before Trump began his latest term in January, and U.S. ag products account for the largest share of U.S. goods exported to China. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
For several years, we have recognized the need to diversify our markets that we ship to and the products that we ship to those markets.
At USDA's Ag Outlook Forum, CEO of the U.S. Grains Council, Ryan LeGrand.
China, to varying degrees, has been a customer of corn, sorghum, ethanol, and distillers grains, but they haven't been all that reliable. We see contracts canceled. We see tensions rise, and they don't buy anything from us. So we really need to diversify our markets, and that's what we've been working on. South Asia is growing. India now has the largest population in the world. We need to get into there. Seeing changes in global population, in economic changes, income growing in places like Africa. We've seen ethanol that's on the product side growing in exports. And then with the competition that's out there from that I just mentioned, Brazil, Argentina, Ukraine, we need to spread out to as many markets as we can. And then so along came ATP, and it was developed under the first Trump administration. It was extremely timely, and it has produced results. It allowed the Grains Council to accelerate our international ethanol export program, something we've been working on for about 11 years, but under the ATP program, we were really able to kick it into high gear. We've had the additional engagement in India, in Africa, and in South America with the ATP program, and creating diversified market opportunities for all the products that we marketed. And again, the hope is that we reduce our reliance on unreliable trade partners. We saw record exports of ethanol in 2024, a total of 1.75 billion gallons and about a $4.1 billion export value. One thing I'll note is that this 1.75 billion does not include about 140 million gallons that's going to Japan in the form of ETBE. They import it in just a little bit of different form, but there's still ethanol in that molecule and that fuel that's going to Japan. So all told, last year we exported just short of 2 billion gallons. That is an increase in export value from 2019 of 1.84 billion and about 413 million gallons. The previous record that was set was 1.6 billion gallons. And I really think we're poised to go further with ethanol exports going forward as more and more countries recognize the benefits on octane, on environment, and on price for this renewable fuel. So ATP and the money we've been able to spend there and the work we've done there has driven policy changes. Canada has adopted a clean fuels regulation that's really driven exports to there. 655 million gallons went to Canada from the United States last year. Put that in perspective, Brazil was our former top customer. The most they ever imported was about 480 million gallons. So Canada really just blew them out of the water with their E10 and even moving to E15 in some of the provinces. Japan has now given us market access that we've been able to work on with the ATP funds. In that ETBE that I talked about earlier, we didn't get that business before. It was all Brazil. So Brazilian ethanol would be exported to Houston. They would convert that into ETBE, and then they would ship it to Japan. And now we get that business because the Japanese government has reevaluated the carbon score and the GHG scores of U.S. ethanol and is allowing up to 100% content in that ETBE, and we're getting a lot of that business today.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Ag Commodity Barometer Index rose 11 points in February to a reading of 152. That's 37 points higher than the index was back in October.
Talking about the Purdue University CME Ag Economy Barometer, Dr. Jim Mentert, Professor Emeritus at Purdue.
The current condition index jumped 28 points to 137, and that was the primary driver behind the increase in the barometer. That's the highest current condition index we've received since December of 2021. The future expectation index was changed very little this month, reaching 159. That's just 3 points higher than it was a month earlier. The Farm Financial Performance Index was virtually unchanged from a month earlier at a reading of 110, but the index remains 42 points higher than it was compared to September and up 20 points compared to October. We asked a series of questions this month about policy and what the expectations are among producers for those policy changes. And the first one was, how important is it for you that a new farm bill be passed in 2025? 72% of the respondents in this month's survey said they think the farm bill passage is either important or very important, and actually 47% chose very important. We also asked producers which of the following policies or programs will be most important to their farm in the next 5 years. And it's clear that trade policy is of the utmost importance to farmers, displacing crop insurance as the most important program or policy. This month, 44% of the respondents in the survey chose trade policy as their top issue or concern, followed by 18% who chose crop insurance. Finally, we also asked producers how likely they think it is that U.S. agriculture is at risk of a trade war that results in a significant decrease in U.S. ag exports. And almost half, 48% of producers in this month's survey said they think a trade war is either likely or very likely. Following up on some of the other measures in the barometer, the Farm Capital Investment Index rose to 59 this month. That's the highest reading we've gotten on that investment index since May of 2021. And we did a follow-up and asked producers about their plans for farm machinery purchases in the upcoming year compared to a year ago. There wasn't a change in February versus January, but if you look at the responses the last couple of months compared to the responses we received late last summer and early last fall, the percentage of producers who plan to increase their purchases has doubled from about 5% to 10% in the last couple of surveys. The short-term farmland value expectation index reading at 118 was up 3 points compared to January and up 23 points since reaching its low back in September. And when we looked at the raw responses to the question that index is based on, you can really see the change in attitudes that's taken place. Late last summer, 24% of the respondents in the survey expected to see farmland prices decline over the next 12 months. In February, that was just 14% of the respondents. And on the other side of the coin, last summer, 19% of the producers expected to see farmland values increase over the next 12 months. This month in February, that was up to 32%.
Potential trends in the 2025 ag economy, per USDA's chief economist, Seth Meyer.
Last year, I was very concerned about the pace in which commodity prices have been falling. This year, I think, is a bit different. Have we slowed that decline? Still not good margins, but I think the momentum is a bit more, maybe perhaps if prices are declining, that the decline is slowing at the moment.
Meyer speaking Thursday at the opening session of the 101st USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum. Year-over-year decreases in commodity prices and cash receipts are expected for most major row crops. On the other hand,
livestock receipts across categories having trended up over the last few years in cattle, prospects for dairy flat but above maybe where they've been,
and increased year-over-year prices for livestock and poultry. As for inputs,
input prices mixed the last couple years of output prices, they're all lower. That margin squeeze continues to occur.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Other countries have used tariffs against us for decades, and now it's our turn to start using them against those other countries.
Speaking to a joint session of Congress on Tuesday night, President Donald Trump.
On average, the European Union, China, Brazil, India, Mexico, and Canada, have you heard of them? And countless other nations charge us tremendously higher tariffs than we charge them. It's very unfair. India charges us auto tariffs higher than 100%. China's average tariff on our products is twice what we charge them. And South Korea's average tariff is four times higher. Think of that, four times higher. And we give so much help militarily and in so many other ways to South Korea. But that's what happens. This is happening by friend and foe. This system is not fair to the United States and never was. And so on April 2nd, reciprocal tariffs kick in. And whatever they tariff us, other countries, we will tariff them. That's reciprocal, back and forth. Whatever they tax us, we will tax them. If they do non-monetary tariffs to keep us out of their market, then we will do non-monetary barriers to keep them out of our market. There's a lot of that, too. They don't even allow us in their market. We will take in trillions and trillions of dollars and create jobs like we have never seen before. I did it with China, and I did it with others, and the Biden administration couldn't do anything about it because there was so much money they couldn't do anything about it. We have been ripped off for decades by nearly every country on Earth, and we will not let that happen any longer. Much has been said over the last 3 months about Mexico and Canada, but we have very large deficits with both of them. But even more importantly, they've allowed fentanyl to come into our country at levels never seen before, killing hundreds of thousands of our citizens and many very young, beautiful people, destroying families. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. They are, in effect, receiving subsidies of hundreds of billions of dollars. We pay subsidies to Canada and to Mexico of hundreds of billions of dollars, and the United States will not be doing that any longer. We're not going to do it any longer. Our new trade policy will also be great for the American farmer. I love the farmer. Who will now be selling into our home market, the USA, because nobody is going to be able to compete with you. Because there's goods that come in from other countries and companies, they're really in a bad position in so many different ways. They're uninspected. They may be very dirty and disgusting, and they come in and they pour in, and they hurt our American farmers. The tariffs will go on agricultural product coming into America, and our farmers, starting on April 2nd, it may be a little bit of an adjustment period. We had that before when I made the deal with China, $50 billion of purchases, and I said, just bear with me, and they did. They did probably have to bear with me again, and this will be even better. That was great. The problem with it was that Biden didn't enforce it. He didn't enforce it. $50 billion of purchases, and we were doing great, but Biden did not enforce it, and it hurt our farmers. But our farmers are going to have a field day right now, so to our farmers, have a lot of fun. I love you, too.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
My name's Jim Sutter, and I'm the CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council.
Sutter speaking recently at USDA's Ag Outlook Forum.
So who's USEC? We are the U.S. Soybean Export Council. We're the international marketing arm for the U.S. soybean industry, farmers through all of our members, and I'll show you a slide of that in just a second. Exports are really important for the soybean industry. 55-60% of the U.S. soy crop gets exported as beans, meal, or oil, so the basic products from soybeans. So really important for us is that we have access to markets and have markets to take the crop away. In 2024, the markets that USEC works in represented 98% of both the value and the volume of U.S. soy exports. That's about 80 countries, and we've got roughly 200 people that are either employees or boots-on-the-ground contractors of USEC that work for us around the world. About 50 of those in the U.S., the balance outside the U.S., but about 200 people in total. Soy exports were between the whole complex, just over $30 billion. And we set a record for soybean meal exports, not soybean exports, but meal. 25 exports, in case you're wondering, our exports are going pretty well, up about 14% versus where we were a year ago, and to a diverse set of markets, which is really interesting to see. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. We're, like Ryan described, we're a kind of a value chain organization. At the very top of that, and I know it's probably small, it's hard to see, but the American Soybean Association and the United Soybean Board, two large farmer-oriented organizations. One manages the national checkoff. One is the policy arm. Those two organizations formed USEC 20 years ago. So they're our founding members. At the top of that chart, you'll see our allied members. So those are people who were involved in the soy export supply chain. So railroads, survey companies, banks, state soybean groups, seed companies, so non-export companies are our allied. And then if you go down to the bottom block, that those are the exporters. And there's about 65 of those. And they literally range from A to Z. There's a couple of them with A, Archer Daniel Midland, AGP, to Zeeland Family Soy in Michigan. So we really have a very diverse set of members. We focus on three main strategic goals as we do our work, and they really do guide us almost every day. So differentiating U.S. soy, elevating a preference for U.S. soy, and making sure that we have market access or attaining market access for U.S. soy. And we do those things in a wide range of different ways that we do them, but those are the real key things that we're trying to do. So when we have ideas for new projects, have ideas for things we could work on. We pretty simply put them through that kind of a test and say, is this going to do one of these three things for us? And that kind of helps us know whether we should proceed with that program or not. So USEC is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. As I said, ASA and USB created USEC, but there's a much longer history of doing international marketing. And prior to that time, it was done by the ASA International Marketing Group. So that was kind of a subset under the American Soybean Association. And you see, we've been active in global trade for a long time. Japan since 1956, the Americas region, El Salvador, Mexico, Venezuela since the 60s and 70s, Belgium since the 70s, you see that picture there. Singapore, we opened our Southeast Asia office in 1979, and then China since 1982. So, long history.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Change actually happens once every 5 years.
Corey Geiger is dairy lead at the Knowledge Exchange Division at CoBank.
Historically, the U.S. Department of Agriculture calculated dairy cattle genetic evaluations, and about a decade ago, a group called the Council on Dairy Cattle Breeding, think the Dairy Breed Associations, Holstein's jerseys, think dairy herd improvement programs, milk test, dairy processing records programs, and the National Association of Animal Breeders, which is all the AI studs, artificial insemination, we're not talking artificial intelligence, have come together to form Council on Dairy Cattle Breeding. This is the 11th time in the U.S. dairy industry that we're having a base change. A base change basically is so the currency doesn't get overinflated. The currency in dairy cattle can be measuring pounds of milk, pounds of protein, pounds of butterfat, productive life, and there's actually 46 traits that they have different rollbacks on. But the rollback that I'm really following is for butterfat and protein, Tony.
Dr. Mike Brook is a dairy specialist at Kansas State.
Today I'd like to visit with our dairy producers concerning some of the data that the Milk Marketing Administrator has recently published. As we look at 2024, how did we actually do in many different categories? We look on the price side. Our average prices actually were up a little bit in 2024 compared to 2023, actually about 7% if we look at statistical uniform prices across the central milk marketing order. So that's a good thing for our dairy producers. As we look at the value of components, during 2024, we saw milk fat be worth more, about 11%, and protein slightly less, about 4% less than what we'd seen in 2023. So overall, good prices for 2024, and those are continuing into 2025, which is great help as we look at milk margins and trying to keep our dairies in a positive cash flow situation. Some of the other data that was shared in their reports for 2024 were the amount of milk that we saw being utilized in different ways. As we look at class 1 utilization, which would be fluid milk, about 29% of the milk that was produced in the central order and pooled on the central order went into fluid milk, and about 50% was in class 3 or cheese. So those two account for the greatest amount of milk that we manufacture into different products here in the central order. As we look at somatic cell count, this is something that we continue to see improvement in over the years. Somatic cell count was lower in 2024 on average for the milk pooled on the order, and that continues to be a bright spot in our dairy industry. We still have a little bit higher counts during the summertime, creeping up over 200,000 cells per mil, but for most of the year, remaining down below 200,000. So hats off to you dairy farmers for all the hard work that you do to keep your cows healthy and produce quality milk for the consumers here in the central order. Some other trends that we've seen in the data is that the total amount of milk pooled on the order was down a bit in 2024 compared to 2023 and some of our previous years. And that just has to do with marketing situations and what the co-ops and others are doing in terms of whether or not they pool milk on the market based on price advantages.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
More details about the Economic and Emergency Relief Program for our nation's farmers. A program now titled
the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program, ECAP.
According to Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins, speaking Sunday at Commodity Classic in Denver, while ECAP logistics in total are still being formalized, the secretary said for the first $10 billion of economic assistance required for release by March 21st,
we are on track to beat that and get that money starting to move immediately in the next few weeks.
Secretary Rollins adds streamlined applications for economic assistance under ECAP and standards for calculating payments are being developed. She also told the audience at Classic,
we are simultaneously working on rapid implementation of the $20 billion in disaster assistance due to weather conditions outside your control.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.